Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive. We are on scene, on site. The cars are playing. Luke Jones is here at the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have the Harlem Globetrotter scratch-offs. This has been a lucky batch, dude. Woman came up holding a $20 bill on my face.
Nice.
Fresh, too. It was like
That's
sharp.
Awesome.
It's like a mint condition $20 bill. Then somebody over here won $2. Somebody over here won $7. So we've had winner, Costas dinner. We're in Dundalk. My son is here. My daughter-in-law is here. Robbie Leonard was here. I threw Dennis O'Donovan out to go do more AI research. I am on Orange Crush number 2. And Luke, I did something that I don't know that I've done. I remember I used to be a designated driver for some of my drunk Dundalk friends on New Year's Eve at Hammerjacks. So I drank a lot of O'Doul's in my day, and you know, I'm a water. You've only seen me drunk once or twice on the NFL. When Roger pays the bill, sometimes I have a third or fourth drink, but and then I have a third or fourth hangover the next day in Minnesota. But I told the bartender, I'm like, look, man, this is my second Deep Eddie Orange Crush, and I got Alan coming over, and you're here, and I'm trying to keep a level head about all this baseball conversation we're about to do. I said, give me a short pour. Don't put too much vodka in it. I said, and here's what I want you to do. The next person looks like they need more vodka in their drink. Just give mine to them. So I don't know how this is going to go, but this is my second drink. So,
ready for the weekend, man.
And I already wrote it. Did you read my Dear John Harbaugh? You're not ready for all that yet.
I did not. Not full disclosure,
that's all right.
As we're
that's
talking right. in real time, you only launched it this morning, and I did not get a chance to read
as
it.
As we're talking in real time, you came in and you're like, Lamar tweeted.
Yeah,
Lamar
tweeted. For anyone listening to this right now, we might have a Lamar extension. We might not, right? But
what did he tweet? Just so I know.
It was a meme from
just the next week when he's a Raider and I'm out of town.
Right.
Hopefully
it's not that.
Because I don't want to work when I'm working.
Exactly. But it was the meme.
St. Patrick's Day, I'm
the
hammered.
Meme or the gif or whatever, yeah. From training day where Denzel Washington, Alonzo, you know, his character, does the boom. And so it's that with a smiley face emoji. So that has, by Friday afternoon, that had Ravens fans in a frenzy about what that could mean and comparing it to 3 years ago when I think, didn't he post a SpongeBob thing 3 years ago?
Yeah,
the
I think
day
SpongeBob.
Or two before.
That sounds about right.
So we'll see. I mean, we've talked about it. We've talked about it even before the season ended. So we're on that watch. And if you're listening right now, maybe you've already gotten the WNST text about it, or maybe we're still in a hurry up and wait as free agency's getting underway.
I'm just trying to get a level straight when we're at a remote. So Luke Jones is here. That's my dude. It's all brought to you by GBMC and our newest sponsors at Farnan and Dermer. The comfort guys, I'm getting more comfortable saying the F&D and the farmer. But they do HVAC. They do plumbing. They've been so good to us. We're appreciative. You'll find them anywhere on the website, anywhere we are. And usually above Luke's left part of his heart. For you at baseball right now, because I want to do baseball.
Yeah.
We'll do plenty of football around here as we get going. And as we get up on opening day and the World Baseball Classic, I've been here in Dundalk for about 3 hours. I've had three or four different people engage me about baseball today. I was at my chiropractor today, Dr. Steve. And I got engaged in there by one of the owners of the Orioles, believe it or not, true story, engaged me today about how I felt about the Orioles. And I'm like, I was more optimistic than you a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then Holiday was hurt for real. Westberg was maybe, and then it was for real. You've been down on the bullpen even with Kittredge.
But,
and then they traded out of the bullpen.
Let me stop you for a moment, though. I don't feel like I've been overly pessimistic. To say I haven't been as optimistic as you, I've still said I think they're a wild card contender. I see them as a team that's can be in the high 80s to low 90s for wins if things go really well. So I just want to, you know, I'm not nearly as down on them as I was a year ago at this time in terms of the opportunity cost or opportunity
loss.
Well,
when I ask if you bet the
winter.
Over on 89 when they were fully intact a month ago, you were not bullish and I
yeah.
was. Right this minute, and I don't even know what the line – I'm not a gambler, and if I were, I'd be working at the Fan. Picking the over-under, do I now think they're a 90-win team as currently constructed with I don't know how many quality at-bats I'm getting at a Holiday, Westberg, certainly Rutschman's a box of chocolates to begin with, as is like Tyler O'Neill and these other guys.
Yeah.
I, I, I don't think that way about Alonzo. I don't feel that way even about Tyler Ward, although that's we'll see about that. Henderson is, you know, you're more bullish on him than I am into him hitting 48 home runs this year instead of 27 home runs this year, right? Somewhere in the middle, he'll hit 38. We'd be right or wrong.
Sure.
But get the betting number on his over-under for home runs. I bet if I'm going to give him an over-under on home runs, Gunnar Henderson, I'm going to say it's 34, 35, right? If you're going to put an over-under. And you're going to take the over, and I'll believe it when I see it. I wouldn't bet it. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying.
If I'm going to take the over on that, I'm certainly not going to pick 48, but
over 34, you would take that? You think
I might be slightly under on that. Like, I think 30, to me, 30, but we're talking 30 as a shortstop, right? Assuming he's still going to hit doubles, assuming he's going to play plus defense.
I'm talking about him being one of the three best players in Major League Baseball or in the American League for this matter.
Let's say American League, okay? Right.
Being MVP candidate for a team that's going to win 97 games because Rodgers is going to go 21-6 with a 3-4 and Bradish is going to go 19-7 with a 2-8-2.
That's a lot of wins in this day and age. There aren't many 20-game winners anywhere anymore.
I gave 19 and 12.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
But if they're going to win 98 games, that's what they're going to do.
Nah, not necessarily.
Well, you're right.
Think about it. Look at ERA. Strikeouts would reflect how effective they're being. And how many innings are they pitching? Like, if you look at that, like, that will paint a better picture for me as far as what they are and what their value is, more so than wins and losses in today's game. Just because, even the top pitchers, go look at what the leading guys were in terms of innings thrown. I mean, forget about 300 innings or even 250. I mean, now it's like, how many are getting over 200? It's a very small list, so...
Meanwhile, they're paying more per inning than they've ever paid.
Of course,
right?
But that in turn,
they're paying more per inning to be at the ballpark.
That's why you don't hear me talk about wins anymore in terms of for a pitcher because
I'm just trying to pencil in.
I understand what you're doing.
What I'm trying to figure
out. And I would say this
for them to be to bet the over and win. That's all. Whatever the over is.
And I would say this, putting aside 20 wins, 21, 19, any of that. Where I am far more optimistic about this team is, no, they didn't go out and get a top-of-the-rotation guy. I get that. However, compared to where they were a year ago at this time, where we were already talking about Grayson Rodriguez being shut down, even if we didn't know that he wasn't going to throw a pitch all year, that was still already there. There's way more upside for this rotation.
By the way, Angel's on the TV here. Is he pitching today? What's going on with Grayson?
He's pitched twice. Looks like his velo has been good. I mean, statistically, it's hard.
He's not broken.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He's going to.
We'll see.
He's going to pitch for the Angels in 3 weeks, apparently.
Sure, we'll see.
That'd be right, so for what that's worth.
Oh, and that's why you heard me not be enamored with that trade, not so much in terms of like that you were going to trade him, but you only got 1 year of Taylor Ward out of it. So, but to go back to what we were talking about, where I am more optimistic, and we'll get into Andrew Kittredge and the bullpen because you've heard me talking about the bullpen even before Kittredge with the shoulder starting to bark now, but this rotation does have more upside. Compared to a year ago, it's not even close. I mean, Kyle Bradish, I don't know how many innings he's going to throw this year. You know, what's the cap going to be? Is it 150, 160, 165? Is it quite that many? Is it more than that? Do they take the governors off and say, like, look, we're not going to baby these guys because they end up getting hurt anyway, right? Which is some of the arguments you hear around baseball with these arbitrary innings and pitch limits and all that. But in terms of just his pure ability, his pure stuff, his what he's shown, not just when he was fourth in Cy Young voting 3 years ago, but how well he pitched before he was shut down again in 24, and how well he pitched, albeit in a small sample, but coming back last year. Go look at his numbers. He was missing bats. He was throwing hard. He was getting guys out. He was dominant.
Well, and that's where spring's important for him the next couple weeks, right?
And that's but when you're if he
get him ready to go five innings on the 28th
of the month,
is
right, he might be better moving forward than any of the big three that the Orioles did not sign this winter. Now, that's not me sitting here making an argument for why you absolutely didn't do that. But if you're trying to lay out a path of where to be optimistic and where to look at the upside, Kyle Bradish absolutely has ace stuff. Trevor Rogers did what he did last year, which was a sub-2 ERA, and it was most – I get it. In a year where the Orioles were not good, but was still most valuable Oriole and pitched his butt off for 3.5 months. And you've added Shane Baz, who I will continue to say, to me, is kind of like Grayson Rodriguez, except the difference is he's been healthy the last 18 months after going through his period of arm trouble and Tommy John surgery a few years ago. So those three alone – and then you add Chris Bassett, who I'm guessing you didn't get a chance to hear Friday's game televised on Mass, and they actually talked to Bassett after his outing. Man, from a cerebral standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, just from an analytical standpoint, that guy's impressive.
And Ben, he's also a player rep with the union.
He is.
So he's going to be a big figure.
Certainly
around here.
Will. I mean, maybe not once
this year because he's only on there one
sure,
year.
Sure, sure, but. But you heard
he'll be a Homestead homie next year.
but Ben McDonald, who was doing the game on Friday and had just been in camp as a guest coach, he drew a comparison to someone that you'll be very familiar with. He compared Bassett a little bit that he gets some Rick Sutcliffe vibes for him in the sense that he can be that kind of positive presence on the young guys that the Orioles had once upon a time, which were Ben McDonald and Mike Messina at that point, Arthur Rhodes.
Well, Sutcliffe brought Bill Murray into the clubhouse to pitch in from time to time, too. You know?
But the point is, I mean, you talk to Ben McDonald, who, and I get it, Ben never became the guy that everyone envisioned when he was 1-1 and
all that.
Neither
did Andy Bennis, by the way.
That said,
so there you go.
Go look. You know, I think because Ben didn't live up to those expectations, you also forget he was pretty darn good for a few years. He didn't become Jim Palmer, but he was still pretty good. But you look at him, you look at what Sutcliffe meant for Messina early in his career, and that's where I look at this thing and say, okay, even if Bassett's not going to be a guy that's going to be on the All-Star team like he was, 4 or 5 years ago, but he'll give you innings. He gets ground balls, which plays well at Camden Yards almost always, assuming your defense is decent. And I think there's also that element of, what can he offer guys like Kyle Bradish and Trevor Rogers and Shane Baz beyond what the coaching staff's doing and analytics and all the different things that they're doing? I mean, just hearing him talk, I mean, he's talking about working with Adley Rutschman in terms of making sure their setup's right, making sure their readings.
That's what a guy's been in the big leagues a dozen years does.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Period. But when you have someone who can do that, on top of everything that your coaching staff and your analytics department and everything is doing, but can apply it. And it's like, hey, I've done this for a decade. Here's how you do it. I mean, I think that's something where you look at Bradish and those guys and say, man, if you're not paying attention to someone like him, shame on you, because I guarantee, regardless of how he pitches as an individual, he can help them in a way that, you know, like we talked about it with Kyle Gibson 3 or 4 years ago, right? I mean,
Charlie Morton for
sure,
5 minutes
exactly,
last year. Sure.
Right, and it certainly... There's more clout when they can still perform, as I talk about a lot. You know, team leadership still needs to come from guys that can play. But assuming he can still be a back half of the rotation guy for them, which is what he's penciled in to be right now, then I think that can pay some dividends and help make Bradish and Rogers and Baz even better. And look, I'm not saying it's all going to go perfectly, right? I mean, we've already seen it now with, you know, in the infield with health and now with Kittredge with the bullpen. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Kyle Bradish, Trevor Rogers, and Shane Baz are all going to the All-Star game. But if you have two of those guys that pop, and let's say, you know, Bradish looks like he was, you know, the path he was on 3 years ago, pre-elbow injury, and I don't think Trevor Rogers is going to have a sub-2 ERA again, but let's say it's a 3 ERA or 3-2, something like that. And if Shane Baz can, you know, now that he's away from playing at Steinbrenner Field, where you kind of look at his home road splits last year.
Well, if you have a big three any way.
Yeah, then you got something. Like, then you've got a team that absolutely is right in the thick of it.
Gives you a chance to
right
win three out of 5 days. More than that,
sure.
Because the fourth and fifth and sixth aren't.
They're not.
Like I've said, they're about not coming from Norfolk off the boat.
Dean Kramer's a league average starter. That's still valuable.
3 innings and 6 runs out of them.
Yeah.
Luke Jones is here. We're at Casas and Dundalk. I'm on my second Orange Crush. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at GBMC, Farnan and Dermer. We're doing sports around here, which we do better than anybody, as always. All right, dude. You mentioned pitching. Anything you want to say about the Kittredge and the bullpen?
Yeah.
Because I want to get into the pitch system because we were going to do a whole pitching thing here at the bar
it's
today. Because and I know you want to do a deep dive, but losing Kittredge where the bullpen innings are. Where's Cano and all this? Where's Craig Kim? Oh, that's right, he's not here. But well, you know, but Housley and we're a couple weeks out on this. It doesn't have to be perfect on opening day. It doesn't even have to be perfect on May 10th. But you can't be 12-26. You know, either, right? Like you at some, I said
don't
23-17.
Yeah.
Be 20. Just play me 5-25 ball for a quarter of the season. Yeah. Like,
don't
literally
be in a position where the season's over in mid-May like it was last year.
Yeah, I'm not asking for miracles here. I just want to feel out
that
I wasn't a dodo bird for betting the over a month ago. And I really the offense let you down so much last year. And there's such like, oh, this guy's going to hit 30. We've already had an argument about whether Gunner's going to hit 29 or 34 or 48 or whatever. Pete Alonso, same thing. Like Frank Robinson, well, he better hit 42 home runs then. This better not be the year he hits 27 and only plays 102 games, right? Like, and we've already got Westberg out, already got Holiday out. I already think Rutschman's a box of chocolates. And the arms haven't fallen off yet. I'm not vibing good right now.
Yeah.
I'm not. I mean, it's not St. Patrick's Day, and I'm not vibing good right now. Like, I'm betting under right now because, like, I know some stuff's going to go wrong.
Sure.
And I'm willing to buy into Rodgers and Bradish and buy all the everything it has said. I'm willing to buy into all that. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And then the hamate bone, and then the Rutschman. I don't know what that is.
Right.
So I'm willing to say Kowser moves in. Mayo hits well enough. Basayo. All right. Rutschman. Doesn't need to look like Johnny Bench, but like
look better than he's looked the last year and a half.
Looks like Chris Hoyles.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
One of the most underrated Orioles
of
the last
40 years.
Okay, so
I'm just making a case for all of this. I'll throw it to you because you're going to start with the bullpen. I know you are.
Yeah, I mean, you know I was concerned about the bullpen even before what's happened with Kittredge. Look, I also want to not be an alarmist here. Guys have shoulder inflammation. Yes, sometimes it can end up being the worst-case scenario, and sometimes it can be, hey, you're halfway through spring training. You know, the arm's feeling a little eh. You back off of it. He's going to miss the first couple weeks of spring or of the season, and then he's fine because that happens. We remember the worst case scenarios while acknowledging that not every time someone has shoulder inflammation, it means that they have a torn labrum or a torn rotator cuff, like Felix Bautista, who by the way actually started throwing.
But every time there's soreness.
Oh, it makes you nervous. It makes you and that's where we go where you know that going into spring training, and you know even the first couple days when obviously they signed Bassett and that put them in a position where they have six. Now, we're going to see about Eflin. Eflin made a spring start the other day. Looked pretty good based on the numbers, based on people that were there watching it. But is he going to be ready for opening day? If he is, then what do they do? And that might be part of this equation as far as what this bullpen looks like in terms of they might go six-man rotation with a seven-man bullpen because you either have five with eight out there.
Well, this is really like Wells and some of these other.
Yeah, I mean,
arms,
Wells is
going to
be
right?
Wells is going to be in the pen. I mean, they've confirmed that now. That was obvious, especially from the time they signed.
What about any of the Norfolk guys that were starters, the Povich, these other guys that might be a little more pliable at this point? Because you really don't believe in a lot of these guys as starters, right?
Right.
You don't really believe that guy is going to be good enough to replace Shane Baz in the rotation unless his arm falls off.
Sure.
And then you're back to wherever you were, you know. But that transition of you're not good enough to be a starter, but, dude, you might have 18 pitches in you in the sixth inning that's really going to be important for us.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's kind of interesting right now. I mean, I don't know who that is exactly. I mean,
well, it speaks to your max effort, too.
Because Tyler Wells is going to be in the pen. They've already confirmed that. I think that was evident from the moment that they signed Bassett. It's like, all right, they're not even going to mess around with stretching him out. He's just going to be in a bullpen routine. And we've seen that. And, you know, we'll see about that. I've liked that profile for a few years now, but he's got to stay healthy. I mean, you're talking about someone who's had multiple elbow surgeries.
The other thing about that, and I haven't been around baseball in a long time, and I don't know how they're trained anymore. That's for you to, you know, you're the one with the press pass. I'm the one drinking from the other water fountain. But in the old days, and I always use Mark Williamson because he was my guy, you know, in that era. You talk about Sutcliffe, and Todd Froworth, and they, I really knew the players, like really knew them, drank with them, went out, and they would all say, talk to Willie about that, talk to Willie about that. And they would say his arm was like he was like double jointed in a way where he could throw 38 pitches and come back the next night and give you 20. And then on Sunday, if you were in the 12th inning, he could just take the ball and throw 60 pitches if he needed to.
Guys are just like
because
that.
He had an arm like that. And he could make a spot start and give you 72 pitches if he needed to. So, and this is 35 years ago. I don't, when I talk to the Dave Johnsons and the people of that era, not even the Palmers, the people of the next era, and when I hear Ben McDonald, who was of that era, talk about it, it's all Russian geography to them because, like, they didn't think about the game that way. I don't think about the game that way. You're a little more younger and more on the analytics side. But the notion that, first off, think of Orlando Brown in football. I'm going to make more money being a left tackle than a right tackle. Even if I'm a shitty left tackle, I'm going to make a lot more money. The pitching side of this is the bullpen versus starting. There's ego. There's it's what I've always done. And all of that, blah, 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 blah. It really is the ability to warm up quickly, to be pliable, all of these things that are physiology, psychology, coming into a game where Frank Robinson handed the ball to Curt Schilling. He said, who's up?
Yeah.
Because he wasn't used to being a relief pitcher. And, and so I'm just – this is my baseball, the way I see it. I hope Tyler Wells is okay with being in the bullpen.
I mean,
or doesn't think it's a pathway to being a starter. And I talked to Greg Olson, and he's a, I'll get Otter on.
Yeah.
He had to make that transition because he was going to be a 300-game winner.
Yeah.
And then they said, kid – go out and take the ball every day, 6 days a week. Different job.
Yeah.
Different
job.
It'd be saying to you, Luke, you're good at baseball and football. You're going to cover NASCAR and lacrosse for me this year. And moonlight on the NHL. It's a different job.
It really is. I think it's not quite that extreme, but there's certainly a different mindset. There's certainly an adjustment to it. I think from, you know, general thinking on it, the general consensus, you know, conventional wisdom on it is it's easier to go from starter who stretched out to bullpen during a season, whereas the opposite of if you're shortened up and suddenly you're someone that, hey, this guy's got the kind of stuff to be a starter, generally that's not something, a transition you're going to make in season. Now, is it easy either way? No, and that's why I think generally, and you know, you asked me about guys at Triple A, you know, so I assume you're talking about the Cade Povich's, the Brandon Youngs, right? Guys that were taking the ball every fifth or sixth day last year because they didn't have anyone else, and now look like they're on the outside looking in. See, the difference is you're still trying to stretch those guys out right now because you want them to be in a position, if something happens, to one or two of your starters, rather than if you just transition them right to the bullpen. But
well, they're also smarter about this in the modern era, as I think about it.
They have more
data.
Whereas
if Tyler Wells pitches on opening day and throws 18 pitches in the sixth inning or seventh inning, he's not going to pitch the next day. They don't play the next day. But but they're going to, I don't say baby these guys. We already talked about there's no 300, there's no 280 pitchers.
Yeah,
like
they
they're going to max effort these guys like a horse running six furlongs and then rest them.
Yeah.
So they don't want to break
Tyler. Another horse in.
So there is a different regimen.
There is.
But I don't know that there's success in that to say that Tyler Wells is going to be first 35 innings into the season pitching to a 2.42 ERA out of the bullpen because he'll be more effective there than he would be if he gave him the ball every fifth day as a fifth starter and he threw 84 pitches.
Yeah.
And gave up six runs in the fifth inning, right?
Yeah.
So I like.
But at the same time, think about there's also
because if you felt like he could give you six innings at 3 ERA, you wouldn't put him in a bullpen.
Sure, no question about it. But at the same time, as a bullpen arm, you're rarely facing hitters more than once. You can shorten up and give and yes, your point is well taken because you've heard me say it a lot. But yeah, there is a different there's a different level of max effort knowing that you're going to throw 20 or 25 pitches as opposed to 90, right? So you have that. In some cases.
And recovery that's going to be normal in the modern
era. No question
era,
about
not
it.
Not Billy Martin recovery.
No question.
Right? Okay?
No question. Yeah. But also you're talking about starter repertoire where you might be throwing four or five pitches, but if suddenly you're moved to relief, they might say, well, you're going to throw two, fastball slider, let's say, and your split might be a show me or something like that, right? Whereas, you know, because Tyler Wells, he might, and I'm using him just as an example, he's the kind of guy that, you know, his worst pitch, you might not see him throw very much anymore, whereas when he was a starter, he's still throwing that 12 times an outing,
yeah.
Right? So there's different ways of looking at it, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see what they do, because I was just watching MLB Network the other day. They were talking about the Dodgers, of course, right? And, you know,
the flagship of the Dodgers.
And they're already in a, you know, there's been questions about Blake Snell and, you know, Yamamoto's healthy, but like everyone's wondering, like what he did in the postseason last year, is he going to bounce back and be effective and give them 180 innings again and all that? And you go and look at what their rotation was in September and October. It was nothing like what it was early in the year. Guys were hurt, and the mindset is really, it's what's really become the mindset. And this is why you need six legitimate starters and two or three other guys that are viable depth in your mind, you know, which, you know, and the cutoff line there might be someone like Cade Povich, let's say. I mean, Cade Povich, you know, wasn't a disaster last year. He was below average, but he wasn't the worst starting pitcher in baseball or anything like that. But the difference is now he's going to be option eight, you know, compared to being one of your top four or five last year. But I think you have to look at it in terms of, you have 162 games. Ideally, in Major League Baseball now, even the best starting rotations, they're averaging maybe six innings, right? I mean, somewhere around there, give or take a couple tenths of an inning on average. So 162 times six.
Well, no, they never go to the eighth, and so if they get knocked out in the fourth, and you are a six-inning pitcher, it knocks you even lower. You know,
sure.
Like, it just takes one bad outing,
yeah,
when all your top outings are six and a third,
but,
right?
But think, so you play 162, and six innings on average, that's 972 innings. So you're
five into
you're
that.
You're kind of thinking, well, but you know it's not going to be five. So it's really, okay, three or four can take, hopefully, a lion's share of 30-ish starts. You know, 28.
185
31.
Innings.
You know, I mean, 185 is still very much on the high end in this day and age. But the point is, you're going to have to fill those innings in some shape or form. So what are you going to do? Is it going to be a five-man rotation? Are you going to use a six-man rotation at times? And we've talked about that because of, you know.
Well, hold on a minute, man. Dude, if they're going to be any good, two of their guys better make 28 to 30. Two of the real guys. The real guys.
I hear you.
Two of their three real guys.
I hear you. Unless you're the Dodgers and you go 10 deep and...
Okay, but then we're talking about this team.
I understand.
Okay,
no, but
you're talking league average. I got you. Okay.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, for me, it's you almost have to look at it more as a puzzle now, where it's like, all right, how are we going to get to 970? How are we going to get to 1,000 innings out of our rotation, knowing that Kyle Bradish is, you know, still coming off of, like, the first full season back from Tommy John
surgery.
What do
you expect from him?
I expect, you know, I mean.
160 innings?
Yeah, probably. I think they're going to be. For me, it's more so I expect him to be very high level, 160. But what does that look like?
But if he's not stiff and he's not sore, you're going to give him the ball every fifth.
That's where I struggle, right? Because yeah, conventional
you're
wisdom.
Not skip him. No,
well, if you're trying to manage and keep him healthy, is there the occasional time where you might try to skip him at? Maybe not skip him completely, but you know, and the All-Star break is a perfect example of this. You know, if he was the next to last guy to pitch before the All-Star break, do you wait and put him at the bottom of the next turn just because you say, hey, that's kind of like
skipping
him?
Well, then you're going to go 27 starts in a healthy season,
yeah,
right? Like, that's how you're thinking.
Sure.
Once a month, you're going to move around him.
Right. And that's also – that's where you kind of come in with the six-man rotation. Look, teams have thought about this stuff a lot, right, in terms of in this day and age, how to manage innings for young guys, how to manage innings for guys coming off of major injuries – how to manage innings just because you know that most guys aren't going that deep into games.
Well,
even
then you
more.
Get the bullpen day too.
Sure,
right?
You have all that. So they've talked about six-man rotations. They've talked about five-man rotations. I remember I wrote about this briefly, and it was a complete spitball. Orioles were on the West Coast kind of, you know, think tank piece where I thought, what about a team that would go even go back to the days of a four-man rotation, but you cap the pitch count at like 75, right? I mean, like, just – I mean, we've seen piggyback in the minors where you basically have two starters and the first guy goes four and the other guy goes four or five, right? That sounds great until someone gets knocked out in the second inning, right? And same thing with these six-man rotations. It sounds great until the ace of your staff isn't getting regular enough work or your bullpen's getting short because guys still aren't going that deep into games, even by design, when you start looking at analytics and third time through the order and all that. So all these teams are trying to spitball. But, yeah, there is something to the idea of, you know, I look at Kyle Bradish and – Part of the angst is he only threw 32 innings last year when he came back. Now, he threw in the minors, but what's a realistic best-case scenario where you're going to be mindful?
Best case.
Realistic, though. Like, I always say best-case scenario, but, like, not pie in the sky where he's going to lead the league in innings.
185.
You know, like, 180, right? 175, something like that. He threw 168 and two-thirds in his 2023 season, which, you know, that was his first full season in the majors. So I kind of look at that.
How many starts did he make? Every start?
30 starts.
Well, remember, he made every start.
He missed.
That's
what?
Every start.
He was on the IL early in the year because what he got? That was the he got hit on the foot. Remember,
right.
Grayson Rodriguez ended up making his debut unexpectedly. But the point is, that's where I kind of look at that and say, okay.
Yeah, we were worried he was really going to miss serious time, and he didn't.
Yeah,
because that was nasty.
I think he was back after the 15-day minimum
or
whatever.
First week of the season, yeah.
So, but you kind of look at it and. But you're trying to piece this all together. So that's where you do look at it and say, all right, well, yeah, maybe if you knew that all your starters are going to stay healthy, maybe you'd convert Cade Povich to reliever. But then what happens a month from now when two guys are on the IL and suddenly you need a starter and Cade Povich has been pitching out of the bullpen, right? So it is kind of tough in that way. But, you know, to go back to the overall point about the concerns about the bullpen, I just kind of look at it right now, like, what are the sure things? Okay, you hope Brian Helsley's a sure thing, right? Because you just gave him a 2-year, $28 million. You hope that, you know, the issue he had with the Mets
like
last
the
year.
Better not need Ryan Mountcastle. They better not
need
him.
Sure,
right. But like literally, sure. that job's got to be filled.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Helsley's got to be the closer.
Sore on period. For him, troublesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already troublesome for me with Kipper.
It is. Like, even, you know, just because it's a reminder of, like, who's your high leverage right now?
Where are those 73 innings coming from? That's what I'm asking, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you look at the pen right now. Okay, Helsley, we're just going to make the assumption he's going to be great. They clearly paid him thinking he's going to be great and that his 6 weeks that he had with the Mets last summer was way more aberration. He was tipping his pitches. I saw a breakdown recently. You could tell the way he was holding
his glove. But also, how many days a week are they going to have a 5-3 lead in the eighth inning?
And that's the other that's the other. Well, this is why I said you need another high leverage arm because Helsley can't pitch every day. And even if Kittredge is healthy, he can't pitch every day. So you kind of look at it right now. Their pen and
is untested. Is that what you would say?
Yeah. Heck yeah, it is. I mean, so you have Helsley. Look,
see, I'm being nice, Katie. Give me my press pass.
Helsley,
untested.
Helsley, he's been a all-star, former all-star closer. Fine. Great. You know, I think I'm optimistic about him. I like the signing, right? But now you're looking at, okay, Keegan Aiken, to his credit, he pitched more high leverage after the trade deadline last year, and he handled himself pretty well. I think Keegan Aiken is
it is
a legitimate
is.
Bullpen arm.
Okay.
Do I want him pitching the eighth inning, though? You know, to me, it's more like I want him coming in the sixth or seventh inning of a close game, right? Because
you want something better than him for the eighth
yeah.
inning.
Yeah, and I had said even before
or maybe a better version of him.
And you heard me say this. I mean, even before the Kittredge injury, I was looking, you know, is there a high-leverage arm to be had? And, you know, Michael Kopech's still out there. Look, I get it. He has an injury history. And including last year, but he's got a great arm, and the upside is beats anyone else in that bullpen right now other than Helsley. I mean, he would be 1-1A potentially as far as your closing situation. That's how capable he is just in terms of an upside if he's healthy. Now, he's still unsigned. Maybe teams are completely scared off by his medicals, right?
Well, pitching's expensive, too.
And there's
what
that,
he wants,
too.
Right?
So,
yeah.
But you just kind of look right now, after Helsley, assuming Kittredge, you know, Albert has already said he's unlikely to be ready opening day. Maybe he's ready the second week. But even with him, you're looking at Keegan Aiken. Yennier Cano, who's been on the decline the last 2 years, I mean, I'm fine with saying, all right, he'll make the club. He's got an option year left. Just keep that in mind.
Well, he was an eighth inning guy.
But I need him to look like that guy again. And he hasn't looked that way.
18 months.
That's
at
what
least,
I'm saying. It's been a while. So, look, Dietrich Enns and Rico Garcia both pitched very well in August and September last year. But it was August.
People in our audience are like, who?
Precisely. Who? They pitched well. In the same way I talked about Cade Stroud.
But if they got to come get Aaron Judge out in the eighth inning with two on.
I have no idea how that's going to go. It might be okay, but I don't know how that's going to go because you're looking at August and September after they played out the string for a last place club, right? That's not the same thing as being in a wild card race and you're pitching the eighth inning on a given night against the Yankees or the Red Sox or whoever. So, yeah, you kind of look at that picture. Okay, Tyler Wells. Grant Wolfram is a good arm. They've got some other. Nunez is a guy that they got in at the trade deadline last year from the Mets. He's an interesting. He might be part of their bullpen, and he's got a good arm. But I don't like anyone sitting here with any level of conviction to say yes.
Call me in June.
That guy's going to be good.
Memorial Day.
We have no idea. So while yes,
Preakness Day if the manager's not fired.
They do right.
Jesus.
I don't think we'll have to worry about that this year, but. Yeah, I kind of look at the names and say, okay, I'll hear Anthony Nunez potentially. I'll hear Cameron Foster potentially. I'll hear Chase McDermott, one of those former starters who now looks like he's going to be in the pen all the time. I think those guys are most likely to start at Norfolk, but out of those three, maybe one of those guys does pop in the way that Cano did 3 years ago, in the way that Felix Bautista did 4 years ago. But until you know that, man, that's a heck of a leap of faith for a team that's supposed to be a contender, right? There's just not a whole lot of proven in that bullpen right now, especially now with the Kittredge situation. So
there's no salary cap, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Danny Coulomb's still out there.
Well,
he worked out pretty well for them a few years
ago.
I'll
break this down for you because Alan just walked in. Yeah. We're going to do some radio with Alan. We're going to talk about the strike
zone. We never did talk about the strike zone.
Mike. My thought on the money side and where they are on opening day, I had Marty Conway on at length this week talking about the business and the way the team's constructed in April is not going to be the way the team's constructed in August. What we're talking about now about innings and all this, it's great March conversation. Once April, we're day-to-day, we're minute-to-minute, we're injury-to-injury, we're start-to-start, we're decision-to-decision in the seventh and eighth inning, and that's what makes baseball so beautiful,
sure.
I think, for all of us, right? But there is this point where, like, the strike pending, the need of the team needs to do what thing well? What do they need to do? They need to win.
Sure.
They need to win. That's
Absolutely.
Your charge. That's not my charge, but it's everybody else. I'm going to watch them whether they win or lose. That's just the way it is for me.
Oh, well, I'm going to watch them.
Right,
but
they aren't.
They need to win.
They aren't.
They need to win.
They'll
There's
be owning the bar here at Casas whether they win or lose.
All their good – if they don't win this year, all that goodwill – and all that excitement of a couple years ago, even before Angelo sold the
team. Well, they've
already
lost 500,000 fans and finished in last place last
year. It'll be
This cannot
gone.
Be a turn.
Yeah.
They can't be 17-29 with Bradish on ice and and Lonzo Hurts. It's crazy stuff, right?
And I don't think they will, but
– Well, Holiday and Westberg are already hurt. Kittredge is already hurt. We're sitting here, and it's not even St. Patrick's Day.
Holiday is not going to be out long. I'm just saying, Westberg, who the heck knows?
I don't know.
Kittredge, who knows?
I thought they were 1,000 to 1,200 really amazing prime of their career at bats that were going to power this team to 91 or 92 or 93 wins and power this team to a better offense, a better defense than what is currently on the field in Sarasota. Alan is here. Luke is here. We used to do the handoff back in the day. Instead, we're going to do the crush-off. We're at Costas Inn. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends. We have the Harlem Globetrotters. So anyway, they're coming to town, and we have winners. Somebody came up to me, a $20 bill. They were holding it up, waving it at me. I'm like, huh? I'm like, oh, I gave you – they won. So we have winners here at Costas Inn and Dundalk. All are brought to you by our friends at GBMC as well, keeping me alive and well. And I do have a doctor's appointment next month, which I ain't been to the doctor's in a while. I hope I'm healthy, but I'm going to find out because I'm going to GBMC. Also our friends at Farnan and Dermer for putting us together with our HVAC and our plumbing needs, sponsoring Luke's Sports Reports and everything we're doing out of Owings Mills and from Camden Yards, but not from Sarasota. Luke – last week, I wanted to take you down to Florida, the Grapefruit League, Oranges everywhere, and the best I can do is a fresh orange crush here.
That's not a bad alternative.
Yeah, I'm okay. We're in Dundalk. We're in my homeland. Luke is here. Alan is here. We are talking baseball. My son's at the bar. He disappeared. My son's at the bar somewhere here, too. He's the one in the pink hair. Back. By the way, my daughter-in-law has orange hair, and it's not even opening day yet.
She's ready.
She's ready for something magic happens. Back for more. Alan's going to join us.